When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kittrell, ladies. I'm here with Sid Lowe. Hello, Sydney.
Hello, Phil. How are you?
I'm good, mate. Now, I know you're in a hotel room, but I haven't actually asked you, where are you?
I'm in Oviedo.
Oh! Did you go and see the mighty Real Oviedo play yesterday?
I did. I saw them win as well.
That is unusual. Well done. Well done. Well, that's great. We can maybe have a very, very brief side chat about that right at the end of the podcast.
Wait a minute. Wait. What are you talking about? Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, okay. Let's not make the whole podcast about Oviedo being great.
No. Instead, let me tell you about our patreon.com/TSFP, because we're back to normal over there this week. That means Q&A pod on Tuesday, bonus pod on Thursday, looking ahead to the Copa del Rey final, a brand new episode of Rincón Cultural discussing life in Spain. So you should join us. It's around €4 a month. It's good value. Come and join us. Match day 30 in La Liga EA Sports saw the following sequence of results. On Friday night, Cadiz beat Granada by 1-0. Lovely goal it was too, scored by Bobby Navarro. Tremendous goal to give Cadiz a really important victory. Saturday saw Sevilla beat Getafe by 1-0, a game which you witnessed firsthand, Sid. Osasuna thrashed Almeria 3-0. Valencia and Mallorca played out a goalless draw. And Barcelona beat Las Palmas by 1-0, only goal of the game scored by Rafinha. Then on Sunday, Celta 0, Rayo 0. The less said about this, the better. Although I have to say, I watched this game and I was at Vallecas earlier this season for Rayo 0, Celta 0. And these are two just stratospherically bad football matches played by the two. I just can't believe. I mean, that first one was awful. This second one wasn't much better. At least, you know, something happened. Barry Aspas hit the bar. There were some seagulls on the pitch. But that was it. I mean, it was really, really poor. Anyway, Girona beat Betis by 3-2. A last-gasp winner for Girona, meaning that it's 4 consecutive defeats now for Real Betis. La Real beat Alaves in a Basque derby by 1-0. And Real Madrid beat Athletic Club 2-0 at the Bernabeu. Both goals scored by Rodrigo. Monday night football should be pretty decent. It's Villarreal, the most informed team in the division, looking to make it 5 consecutive wins against Atleti. We're not entirely sure where to start this week, but we're going to start at Getafe, Sid, a game that you were at.
Well, I wasn't actually. I should probably just stop you there because I had an accreditation problem, so I wasn't able to go. And then I tried to buy tickets, but it was sold out. So unfortunately, I wasn't actually there in the end.
I just assumed. Well, you know, you should never do that. But yeah.
No, you were right to assume, and the intention was to go, but there was a small issue, which meant that I wasn't able to go.
Okay. Well, there was a rather bigger issue as well after the game. Sevilla condemning racist insults aimed at Argentinian player Marcos Acuña. He was called a monkey. And Quique Sanchez Flores, who was called a gypsy. He talked quite eloquently about it in the post-match press conference, Quique Sanchez Flores. He said, "I'm proud to be a gypsy, but it's one thing to be being a gypsy or having gypsy heritage and another thing for it to be used as a racist insult. Some fans think they can say whatever they want, but we're workers. We're here to work in peace in a space where we should be respected." I mean, it's a shame that we're talking about this, but this was officially denounced by Sevilla, right?
Yeah, and so you have a situation in which Quique Sanchez Flores was being shouted at by people behind the bench. Now, there's another layer to this, I suppose, which is the fact that he was coach of Getafe and did a wonderful job. And so I think that possibly meant that it hurt even more. But it's the nature of the abuse that he picked up on. And as you say, he spoke quite eloquently about it because there was this idea, as he said, that, you know, there's a pride in having partly gypsy heritage. He talked about the phrase was every pore of me that has it in has. He didn't actually use the word blood, but has gypsy blood in it. There's a kind of a sense of pride there. But it's another thing to use it as a as a weapon, as a tool to attack you with. And I think that's a key point, which is actually, I think, been underlooked. We've talked about this a bit, been underlooked in quite a lot of the discourse, in particular around Vinicius, but just about racist abuse in general. This idea that, well, it's just saying, you know, it's just saying something that's true. No, because it's the use of those terms as a weapon that makes it so appalling. And Kike Sánchez Flores spoke very, very eloquently about it. I think that as you say, both Sevilla and I think Getafe will, I certainly hope Getafe will respond in the right way, partly because of the fondness they have for Kike. I don't know what will happen next, because of course there's a protocol to play out. There will be this will be looked into by what's known as the competition committee, which deals with disciplinary matters. And I don't know whether there'll be a fine for Getafe, whether there will be a closing of part of the ground, but it was yet another episode of something that's becoming sadly quite common.
Before we go on and actually discuss some football, there is something else that we need to talk about, a horrible and despicable incident that took place in the third tier of Spanish football, the game between Sestao River and Rayo Majadahonda, with Majadahonda's goalkeeper being racially abused by some fans behind the goal, and Rayo Majadahonda said walking off and refusing to complete the game.
Yeah, so it's their Senegalese goalkeeper, Sheikh Sarr, who had heard fans abusing him. And post-game, the club's captain and actually the referee put this in his report, although the referee put it in as reported speech. He hadn't heard it himself. He said he'd been told that the goalkeeper had heard monkey chants, had heard people calling him, I'm loath to even repeat it, but anyway, referring to his colour, people calling him a monkey. It was, you know, really horrendous, and he climbed into the crowd and confronted them. Obviously, teammates came over and pulled him out of there. He got sent off, which obviously is normal for him to be sent off. And Rayo Majadahonda walked and refused to come back out. And I thought it was very. I hope that this has a real impact. Jorge Casado, the captain of Rayo Majadahonda, was where he spoke to a couple of the radio stations. And I thought I was really impressed by him, because he talked about this and he said, look, we went off and we didn't come back on, and we spoke to Sarr about what he wanted to do, and he's devastated. You know, he's the phrase he used was sunk. He's sunk by this, and we don't want to play. And he's you know, he was told that if you don't play, you lose this game 3-0. He said, fine, whatever the consequences, because this can't go on. This cannot happen like this. And I was struck by the determination, which I think is obviously absolutely right, but also that sense that, okay, we're not going to argue about the criteria here. If the criteria says we lose the game, we lose the game, because this is bigger than that. And I hope that this has an impact. The referee's report obviously points out that the goalkeeper climbed into the crowd in front of the fans, and the goalkeeper was aggressive with him when he sent him off, which is of course not at all surprising given everything he'd been through. The referee then notes that he was told about this racist abuse, which he himself didn't hear, and it's horrendous.
Very grim, yeah, but also it does feel like, yeah, they've set an example now. This is what needs to happen. If this ever happens again, this is what we do. But then maybe
there's a problem that I have with this. Not with what they did, but there's a problem I have with the way it's structured. As I say, Rayo Majadahonda's captain's response, Jorge Casado, was to say, if we lose this 3-0, fine. We've lost it 3-0. The problem is that can't be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
That can't be fine. That's where, and it's quite difficult, because of course you can't, I don't know how you deal with if a team walks off the pitch and they forfeit the game, but then, if you like, the team that has the fans that did the abuse effectively win. And so that needs to be revisited in some way. Mm. Yeah. But at least for the time being, Rayo Majadahonda is saying, there's something bigger than this. There is something bigger than the result, and if we lose, we lose.
Yes, you know, it was very well handled by them. All right, let's talk about some football, shall we? Barcelona beating Las Palmas by a goal to nil. The goal finally came in the second half from Rafinha after a beautiful ball in from João Félix, who came on as a substitute and had an impact on the game, which is good to see, if a little bit rare.
Well, look, I mean, João Félix is a very, we know this anyway, and we've discussed this many times, he's a very strange player, because he's a player that has a huge amount of talent, and quite often you watch him and think, I'm just not sure he's that good. And yet other times you can watch him and think he's brilliant. This pass, if you see it in slow motion, if you get the chance to see the kind of the chopping nature of the way that he actually plays the ball, and to use the cliche, almost like a kind of a golf shot, he cuts across the ball to clip it up. It's a wonderful pass. It's played really, you know, the execution of it is absolutely impeccable. I have said this a few times, but I actually think if you look at João Félix's contribution, and I say this, by the way, as someone who's not particularly a defender of João Félix. I say this as someone who, in the broad scheme of things, obviously with plenty of nuance and caveats and so on, thinks that in this kind of big João Félix-Simeone battle, Simeone has mostly been proven right. But actually, if you look at João Félix's contribution numerically at Barcelona this year, despite not always being a starter, despite not always giving you some of those things that perhaps are less tangible, perhaps are less measurable, his contribution's really, really high. Now, I'm not sure, I must admit, off the top of my head, I've forgotten now whether it's goals and assists or assists and goals. But anyway, it's 9 goals and 8 assists or 8 goals and 9 assists that he's provided for Barcelona. That's a really pretty good return. And it's better than almost everyone else in the team, with the exception, obviously, in terms of goals of Lewandowski and assists of Gundogan. There is no one else who has that level of contribution.
We're talking all competitions here.
Yes, we are. Yes.
Yeah,
there we are.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, I guess so. And yet, why does it feel... Why do we feel that he's not consistent?
I sometimes think with him, A, because, of course, he isn't consistent, and that's a reality. I think that is true. I think because sometimes you see in the way that he plays... I think there are some players, and I realise I'm sort of undoing my own reservations about João Félix by saying this, because I do have those reservations. I'm not denying that at all. I think there are some players whose body shape, whose body language, whose way of expressing themselves exaggerates how little they are doing. And they're not necessarily doing less than other people. I think there's something about his body language that sort of says, I don't care. And maybe that's not fair. Maybe it's just the way that he kind of, you know, the way that he moves, the way that he expresses himself, that slight hint with him. Do you not think sometimes that hint with him that he's sort of pouting a little bit? And I think that puts people off more than maybe it should. And I think we sometimes allow ourselves to be carried along by kind of superficial expressions of things that maybe mean we're a little unfair on him sometimes.
That's interesting. I'm not sure I'd considered it like that. I mean, he does pout quite a lot. I don't even think he's hinting. I think he does pout quite a lot. And
And I just wonder if that makes us kind of quicker to reject him, if you sort of mean. And I don't know if that's entirely fair sometimes.
It's 6 goals in the league, which is not a massive return in 1,325 minutes. It's a goal every 3 games, basically. So it's not...
Yeah, but he's a creative attacker rather than a number 9.
Yeah.
So it's not terrible by any means.
It's not. In the league,
who's got more than him? Gundogan will have, and probably Ferran Torres at a guess. As well as Lewandowski, obviously.
In the Barcelona team, Robert Lewandowski, Ferran Torres are the only two players that have got more goals.
Right, and Gundogan hasn't, and I thought he might have because he takes penalties. Right, so it's only two players. And Ferran's a curious one. Ferran is almost the opposite of João Félix, isn't he? In that with Ferran, you sometimes are not sure if the absolute elite level of technical quality is there. But he times his runs well, he's committed... He finishes okay. I think he has his hot and cold moments, but he's kind of like the opposite of João Félix, isn't he?
Kinda, yeah, kinda. Barca are still on this good run, Sid, since Xavi decided to walk away.
It's very interesting the way that the kind of the talk around Xavi has shifted. Now, again, this is another game.
The discourse.
Discourse is the word I was looking for. In fact, sounds a little bit highfalutin to use the word discourse, but I think you're right, it is discourse, and I use it a lot, and I probably shouldn't.
You use it all the time. Like,
yeah, a bit, but I sort of check myself, because I sort of think, I'm making it sound really, really kind of high and mighty, this discourse. It's just the shit people say, right?
Right. that's the name of the pod today, the shit people say. Yeah.
And first of all, you know, the results have been good. I think we would probably both agree, wouldn't we, that we're not seeing huge amount of brilliant performances. But I think we're seeing a handful of quite good ones. I don't think we're seeing brilliant performances yet, but we're starting to see a handful of quite good ones. This was okay, although admittedly Las Palmas hit the post on, 86 minutes? And so Barcelona could have been caught, and then maybe the way we analyse this and the way we talk about this would be different. If they draw, maybe we're saying, look, there they are, they've been found out. But to go to the discourse, Xavi obviously at first said, there's no way, you know, I go. And he actually got asked when he announced that he was departing, you know, what if you won the Champions League? No, nothing would change. And as we've mentioned over the last few weeks, every time it's brought up now, because it's become an obsession, partly because Xavi's allowed it to become an obsession for people to say, well, are you really going? And he keeps saying, no, nothing's changed, and using this lovely Spanish phrase, a día de hoy.
A día de hoy.
As of today, nothing has changed. And of course, when you say as of today, what you're effectively saying is tomorrow's another day.
Yes.
As of tomorrow, it might be slightly different. Now, to add to this, because you could say, well, it's just a sort of an empty, cliched phrase, but the momentum is building. You had Joan Laporta in an interview with, I think, El Mundo Deportivo, was it last week or the week before? Last week, I think, now. And he said, you know, I would like him to continue. And then before the game at the weekend, Rafa Yuste, who is the vice president, I believe, he's certainly on the board of directors, I think he's the vice president, said, I'm trying to convince Xavi to stay. Post-game, Xavi was asked again, in the context of these comments, not just asked, are you really going to go? Yet again, asked the same question. He was asked, you know, Yuste's just said this. And Laporta said what he said in midweek. And Xavi said, well, Rafa's a friend. And he's very nice to me, and it's very nice. And he said, but look, and he didn't quite say nothing's changed, because he actually tried to avoid it. He said, well, today we rest and we prepare for the next game. It was a real, I don't want to answer this question sort of answer. But then he said, and I thought this was quite telling, he said, it's certainly better to be in an environment in which people are trying to make you stay than which it seems like they're going to push you out. And I think there we saw a little bit of the truth about his walk away. It wasn't just about the media. It wasn't just about people not rating him. It wasn't just about his frustrations. It was also about a sense from him that internally there were some pretty significant questions about him. And those questions have shifted. And why have they shifted? Because the team is playing better. I think in part because the alternatives to him are not that great. Because the team is still in the Champions League. Because they're not going to win the league, I don't think, unless something really amazing happens, but they are going to finish second, or probably going to finish second now. They are producing performances that suggest that there's something okay. And of course, because those young players have come through, which I think has created the feeling that actually it's not over. Actually, there are things happening, and maybe Xavi can help with Kubasi and with Lamine Yamal. Now, I actually think 5 months ago, we were not sure that Lamine Yamal was progressing as quick as we might like, which is an absurd thing to say, considering he's 16. But, you know, he wasn't playing every minute, but he was playing every game. But now we've seen things from him, not least in the Spain game, think, wow, you know, this is really, really special. And so it's very, very striking. I don't know if you heard what Rafinha said, which I thought was quite interesting.
No.
So Rafinha, I mean, part of the context of this, of course, is that Xavi has talked constantly about how the team has improved since he said this. I think in part, and we've discussed this a few times, because he's trying to convince himself that he did the right thing. I think, in announcing, right, that's it, I'm going. And of course, there's a couple of elements of him announcing that he's going that we still don't know. Whether this was partly to avoid the sack, whether this was really him walking away, whether he was... one or two things there that I think don't fit still. Anyway, Rafinha was asked about this. You know, Xavi says the team's improved since he announced that he was leaving. And Rafinha post-game says, I don't think it's got anything to do with that. He says, the players, we spoke and we realised what it was we had to do to be better. He didn't actually tell us what those things were. I suppose run around a bit was probably one of the answers.
Yeah, run around a little bit more. All right. Do you think he, briefly, because we should move on, do you think he will leave at the end of the season? I mean, I can't see him staying.
I can't see him staying, but then at the same time I started to think, what's the alternative now?
Well, just he goes and just chills and they get someone else.
And who's that someone else? You see, I think that's part of this.
Roberto De Zerbi.
Maybe.
Who knows? I don't know. I mean, but, you know.
No, honestly, I don't know. No, I'm afraid I don't. I'm not going to claim any knowledge here.
No. All right, let's move on. Quick word on Real Madrid and Rodrigo scoring both goals in the 2-0 victory over Athletic Club. The first goal is a brilliantly taken goal, and it feels like a goal we've seen scored quite a few times, not least by Vinicius on the left, cutting in and firing with his right foot. Rodrigo quite likes to play there as well, I think.
Yeah, and it does feel a little bit harsh, doesn't it, to kind of pick up on a great performance from Rodrigo and almost present it as a problem. But, I mean, there is an issue there, maybe only a small issue, but there is an issue there, which is Rodrigo's best position is Vinicius's best position.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is also Mbappe's best position.
Yes.
Lads, what are we going to do? I think they've got a really good manager in terms of someone who can manage that kind of problem. And I'm doing the speech marks things now. I know you can't see it on a podcast, but I'm doing them. Because I think Ancelotti is very good at contextualising it for players, making players feel wanted, even if they're not necessarily in their ideal role on the pitch, trying to find a fit for all of them. But yeah, it's very noticeable that that Rodrigo plays better without Vinicius. Not necessarily because Vinicius is not on the pitch, but because Rodrigo is occupying that role. And actually what we've seen in recent weeks with Vinicius playing maybe a little bit more narrow, a little bit more central, I wonder if at some point there's going to be an attempt to at least try it over the last few weeks of the season, particularly if the league title is won, to try something that somehow finds a place for Vinicius a little bit more centrally. Not necessarily as a false nine, but as a kind of an inside left. But then you're still loading a lot of players onto one part of the pitch. But anyway, the bottom line is you've got Vinicius, who's brilliant, and Rodrigo, who's brilliant, and Mbappe, who I think is probably quite brilliant as well.
10 league goals now this season for Rodrigo. It's his best ever campaign in terms of goals. He's been a bit hot and cold this season. He's had sort of stretches where we thought, oh wow, he is fantastic, and then he's gone quite a few games without scoring.
And I think part of that is about that position, about not being quite exactly where he wants to be. I think his natural role, although we're talking about him as a left-sided player, his natural role is to kind of float around a forward. And I think you can do that a little bit when you're playing in a wide position in a team as good as Real Madrid, because those spaces open up for you and you can kind of play around, well, whether it's Joselu or Brahim or even Bellingham or sometimes Vinicius as well, if you're kind of coming into those more central positions from both right and left. And I think it's probably worth, we do say here, that these good performances this year from him haven't all come on the left. He's played well on the right as well, but I think he's even better on the left. But you're right, he is a slightly hot and cold player. I guess in a way, part of the answer to that is it's impossible for any player to be brilliant every game. And in particular, if you're a creative player where spaces can sometimes be denied to you depending on the way that the other team sets up, depending on the way that your team sets up. As I say, again, depending on whether or not you're playing left or right or off the front. But I think he's really, really talented. I do think he is a player that potentially will find his opportunities being fewer than he would like. I do think that's true.
Well, we'll see how many opportunities he gets. He got one against Athletic Club, an Athletic Club side who have the Copa del Rey final to look forward to next weekend. And even so, Sid, they fielded quite a strong team, a very strong team.
Yeah, they did. I think there are two ways of reading that. I think one of them obviously is it really matters because, you know, they're fighting for a Champions League place, which they're currently still in. But obviously, if Atletico win tonight, they won't be. So I think that matters. I also think there is definitely a feeling that you prepare for the cup final by competing, that you don't prepare for the cup final by resting everyone. And in particular, and I think this is really, really, really significant, by the way, in particular off the back of an international break, because Athletic have international players. In fact, they had four players in the Spain squad. But you still, for a lot of those players, If you rest everybody for the Real Madrid game, you kind of come to the cup final and two weekends have passed without people playing. And that's quite a lot. And so I think there's probably that risk of saying, you know, don't take the momentum out of a team that had extraordinary momentum. And so I think that's part of it as well. And by the way, that has a knock-on effect. You look at the Champions League for Real Madrid. Real Madrid are now going to go into that Champions League game with Man City, having had 9 days off, which on the face of it is a really good thing. What I don't know for a club like Real Madrid that's kind of, you know, its natural routine is to be playing all the time, what I don't know is if actually that might turn out not to be such a good thing for them. Although it's probably better than City's running, which of course is a game every three days between now and then. I think Athletic, this was a game they could have done without, to be honest, but it was also a game they had to take seriously.
It was also a game in which Eder Militao made his comeback
for
Real Madrid. Came on for the last 2 minutes of injury time and his every touch was cheered. I think he made three passes and they were all wildly cheered. So let's see if he's fit enough for the Manchester City game.
I think he might be fit enough for the second leg. I think he, I, yeah. My guess is, I mean, I'll probably end up looking stupid now in 9 days' time. My guess is he doesn't start the first game, but he might be ready to start the second, depending, of course, on how the other central defenders are and what kind of form they're in. He said something post-game, Militao, which on one level I think is an easy kind of platitude, but I actually think there was more in it than that. He said something about, this is a brilliant group of people who've, something along the line, I can't remember the exact wording, that really looked after me in this period. And I think one of the things that's really noticeable about this Real Madrid team, despite the fact that there are brilliant players in it, is that, and this is genuinely is different to some previous periods in the club's history when they've had really good players, it feels like there's a communion within this group, which I think is really striking, considering the quality of the players, considering the potential for egos within that. This does feel like a young, with the exception, obviously, of Kroos and Modric, who are slightly different, a young and kind of very dynamic and really quite united group of players. And I think that's potentially very good news for them, because I think it's really easy when you have this many good players, and obviously let's see what happens when Mbappe comes in, for those kind of intangibles to not really work. And it does genuinely feel like Real Madrid don't really have tossers in the dressing room. And that's pretty unusual, genuinely.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. Let's talk about Girona, who secured a really important victory for them with a 92nd minute winner from Christian Stuani. What a hero, absolute hero, the 37-year-old Uruguayan. He scored in injury time after Artem Dovbyk had scored twice for Girona, and William Jose had scored twice for Betis as well.
Those two goals from Dovbyk, by the way, mean that him, Budimir and Bellingham are all now joint top of the Pichichi table. I mean, the idea that Dovbyk or... I mean, even Bellingham, who's not a forward, but the idea that Dovbyk or Budimir could be top scorer this year is brilliant. As someone who loves it when it's, you know, not the obvious people all the time, I'm really, really pleased with him. He'd actually had a bit of a bad run.
Yes.
And so I think it was quite a relief for him to score. The penalty he takes so coolly, he doesn't look like a man under pressure. But I think it was quite a big relief for him. A couple of bad mistakes in the goals that Betis scored from David Lopez, I think it was. And then the goal at the end. I love, did you hear what Michel said post-game? I really love this about, so Stuani scores and goes mad, as of course you would, and everyone slides into the corner and it's pissing down with rain and they're all piling on, and football's much better in the rain. I always say this, but football is much better in the rain. And Stuani scores this goal. And post-game, Michel says, the first game we play in Europe, Stuani is the captain. I want Stuani to be the captain, the first game that this team ever plays in Europe. Which, of course, says one thing. It says Stuani's staying.
It does.
If we take him at his word.
It does, yes. And it also means that Girona are getting into Europe, which they are. It's just which competition will they be in. They've now got a 9-point cushion ahead of Athletic Club, who are in fourth. Of course, Atleti could move into fourth this evening and cut that gap a little bit. But it's looking good. It's looking good for them to get into the Champions League.
It is. I thought it might slip away from them, to be honest with you. But I think 9 points now at this stage, I think you hold that now. I don't think they lose that.
It's not necessarily looking good for Real Betis and their manager Manuel Pellegrini. It's four consecutive defeats now. They are still seventh, but just worrying sensations.
Yes, definitely. I saw a league table yesterday of, I mean, I know these kind of figures often are very skewed because it kind of depends on the fixtures you've had and so on. But a league table for 2024, and Betis, I think, is something like 16th. So, you know, not in a relegation zone, but this isn't where Betis should be. I think you're right. I agree with you that sensations, that great word, which is a little bit more than feelings, but just kind of that sense, isn't it, that it's not right. That sense that Betis aren't what Betis should be. And that the momentum has gone out of them. I actually, for what it's worth, think this was already the case in the summer, that Pellegrini was already thinking that maybe there are other things I should be doing. Maybe I've taken this as far as I can. I guess the question then becomes, where does he go? What does he want to do next? And what do Betis do if they are to try and replace him? But it does feel like, I'm not going to say the end, because the end makes it sound very dramatic, and this is still a very good club with good players and so on. But it doesn't feel good.
No, it doesn't feel good for Betis. But the weekend off now to regroup, come back and They host Celta Vigo in a couple of weeks' time. A Celta Vigo side who drew 0-0 with Rayo, a result which was conditioned in importance by Cadiz beating Granada in that big Friday night game. Sid, there was no new manager bounce for Granada, who had rather the unlikely appointment of José Ramón Sandoval bringing him in. And they didn't win. They lost again. They're down. Almeria are down. But it's going to be one of Cadiz, Celta, Rayo, Mallorca, Sevilla still not out of it. But, you know, they're not going down.
It's true, isn't it? I think you're right. I think they're not going down, but they are not quite out of it, are they? Despite the turnaround. I mean, obviously, you look at the table and you look at what's happening and you think Cadiz, but actually Cadiz has started to pick up significant amounts of points.
They won two of the last three.
Exactly, two of the last three, and I think they've drawn four in a row before they finally won. So they've gone, I think I'm right in saying, five games without losing. And so if you take that little package of six, seven games, and you compare it to Rayo for a start, but I think to Celta a little bit. We don't know. You know, Celta got the win with the new manager after Rafa's sacking, but it wasn't a huge amount of the weekend, was there? Now, they feel a bit hard done by because there's a potential penalty on Aspas towards the end, and there's a
goal. Absolutely clear goal that's ruled out.
There's a goal ruled out, and I must admit, I wouldn't have ruled that out for that. But yeah, I'm not confident about Celta at all. I'm not that confident about Rayo either, I'm sorry to say.
No, neither am I. God, no. Absolutely. Deeply unconfident. They've got a big game against Getafe after the break, so let's see how that gets on. Before we go, Sid went to see Oviedo play Villarreal B as Oviedo celebrated their 98th birthday, and they won, Sid. Well done.
I tell you what, Santi Cazorla can play football. Bloody hell, he's good.
Is he good? Is he still good?
He is. He is fabulous. He is fabulous, yeah. Good. Yeah, I mean, genuinely, you watch him and he's, you know, he's just a different level to everyone else on the pitch. One of the things that's really noticeable, and you know how normally fans believe that, you know, that everyone's out to get them. And, you know, the other team are dirty and the referee is cheating you. When it comes to Santi, I think Oviedo fans certainly the fans around me yesterday, they're sort of like, everyone respects Santi so much. It's like you watch opponents, it's like they're scared to kick him. And you watch referees, it's like there's one really quite bad tackle from Santi. The referee doesn't give him a card or anything. And then people around us were just laughing. He's going, Santi Cazorla, you can't book Santi Cazorla.
Well, good. I'm glad that you got to see Oviedo record a victory. Elsewhere in less important news, Eibar beating Eldense 5-1. Leganés drawing 0-0 with Cartagena and Racing Santander winning 3-2 at Sporting. That means Leganés top of the table on 60 points, ahead of Eibar on 55, Espanyol on 54, Racing and Valladolid on 53. And of course, Oviedo are 1 point outside the playoffs.
Yeah, 1 point in one place as ever.
That's it for today's edition of TSFP. Thanks very much for listening. We're over at patreon.com/TSFP for the rest of the week. We're answering your questions on Tuesday and looking ahead to the Copa del Rey final on Thursday. So make sure you join us for loads of bonus content. Ah, and we're doing Rincón Cultural as well, where we talk about life in this wonderful country that is Spain. So make sure you come and join us for around €4 a month. Adios, amigos.
Cheerio.
Network.